Hello, how you doing, everybody? Welcome to your Monday morning. Welcome to TSN 1200 for this 20th day of September 2021. Gang's all here. JR, Simmer, and Hammer. And you're waking up to what will be a very fine day after a very nice weekend. In fact, we got a couple of nice days left, and then looks like it's going to get wet toward the middle of the week for the rest of the work week. But for today, lots of sunshine around. 24 degrees, typically this time of year. 18, 19 is your high, so we're above normal for the next 2 days. Going to be nice, but as we said, showers move into the region. It looks like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. See about the weekend later on. But a nice day today as you wake up, though. It's a chilly 7 degrees this morning. 7, that's right. We say good morning to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
I'm outstanding. And you know what? A little rain later in the week, JR. At least it's not that rain that we get, what, early September or late September, early October, where the leaves start kind of coming down. I'm not a fan of that one.
No.
So, hey, still pretty green here. So, good. An absolutely gorgeous weekend weather-wise.
Yeah. Although I did notice, kind of look around. I don't notice a lot of leaves on the ground, but then I look up in the look up at some of the trees, and they're like,
oh, for sure, yeah.
Oh, man,
yeah.
That one's lost half its leaves. And all the rest of them are red. Looked like they're going to leave soon. So yeah. I don't think we're at quite leave. We got to go to the Gatineau Hill and check out the leaves. Don't know if they were quite there yet.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You have to say it
in
that tenor of voice as well. Oh, yeah.
Is that an English?
We got to go and check out the leaves.
Is that an English tourist?
Not
or what,
sure.
What are we talking about here?
I don't know what I've got going on right there.
I used to be in Portland, Maine all the time, and it was cool, the waves of the tourists. And I'm assuming it's pretty close every year, although they can change quickly. But, it was interesting. It would filter down from Quebec all the way down through New England and then into Maine. And all of a sudden, the buses would be loaded. The place would be just packed with people wanting to just cruise around on a bus and look at the beautiful trees.
There you go. All right. Good weekend.
It was nice. Nice to get out to the CTC on Saturday. So that was really cool. And
now, were there 1,000 people there?
Well, somebody asked me, JR. I don't know. Like seriously.
All right, Hammer.
I asked you.
I was kind enough when the people said, what time is the game at? It was nice enough to respond twice. Like, really, you have the ability to find out what the game. Some guy asked me how many people are there. I don't know.
Did it look like? You know, all
that's a really good question, Jared. I don't know. And this is a flashback. I used to, when I was scouting, when you had a paper report, I used to do my paper reports, and David Poyle would tell me every morning to fax him, and this is old, of course, this is 90s, fax it in so as soon as he gets to his desk, he can read it. And then I'd get to a payphone. Again, here we are, early 90s. I get on my payphone and have all my sheets ready, and they say, what was the attendance last night? And I just scramble. I just start scrambling. I'm like, well, look, 2/3 full, and I think based on that.
Good.
So be
ambiguous. That's good.
So were there 1,000 people? I guess so, Hammer, right? I mean, I
asked you when you came up during the first intermission. I said, hey, is there 1,000 people here? Because it just didn't sound.
Well, it's 1,000 total, right? So you got players, staff.
Well,
so in terms of fans.
Yeah. And you said, I don't know. And then I asked, do you think you could count them individually? Mm. And you said, I think so.
Okay.
So then I'm thinking maybe not quite 1,000
around.
Which, if it didn't, quote, sell out, I'm a little bit surprised because, boy, you just... Judging by social media, it's like, I can't wait to go to this game. I'm going to the game, or I'm going to watch the game, or I'm going to listen to the game. There seemed to be a general air of excitement, so I would be surprised if there were some tickets that remained unsold.
Yeah, and as I said, it was all to the left of. I was fortunate to sit down in the TSN studio. Everything was down to that facing the bench. So, yeah, I really don't know, Jerry. Anyways, it was just nice, and it was really neat, as the announcer mentioned, 562 days, the last time that there was a game with fans at the building. Obviously, that's based on the last time, I'm assuming, I was at a game, JR. So it was just really nice to drive, to park, to go in, to sit and just watch a good old ice hockey match. And I had my new eyewear going. And man, oh man.
You see things now.
It was really quite interesting.
What a concept.
Yeah. Like I actually could identify.
Helps the scouting reports.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, it really was. It was just like, hey, sit back and just really enjoy. And to me, hey, I'm hockey's first for me, and there's just nothing better than live hockey.
All right. Hammer, your consensus from having not been there for now.
Well, you were there
last year when the building was empty.
The building was empty, and for me, it just seemed the same. Until Merlinen made this miraculous save late in the third period, that's when I really heard the crowd. Not during the goals, and that could have just been the goal horn is just so loud, it drowns them out. But that save, that's when I said, wow, I hear fans in the building. because it was loud at
still,
that point.
Still haven't turned down the goal, the train horn. Eh?
No.
Always strikes me as just a little bit too loud. I get that, but I've always been a big fan of kind of letting the building kind of speak. Don't need the enhanced, you know, let's turn it up to 11 train horn. I think 9 is sufficient.
You don't quite know what the sound of the empty building, but, you know, with the fans there, maybe let the fans have a little reaction and then hit that horn. But for me, it was more the same as the regular season last year.
Maybe they're unveiling all the good stuff for the regular season. They're going to save it.
Right? The music in L.A., I love that when they all of a sudden score. And I don't know if they have anything else, a horn, but they play the We Love L.A.
Yep.
They kind of get that going. But the real story of the weekend, JR, and I mean this, I'll say this very sincerely. This is the first time ever that Hammer met Pierre McGuire.
Yes, it is.
Like, think about that, right?
Now and he came in and had a great bro hug.
Yeah, so he came up, just to reset here, up and was part of our second intermission.
Yeah.
Now you would obviously be very familiar with him from having seen him broadcast hockey games on TV for 20 years. So honestly now, you had to introduce yourself.
I set it up earlier in the broadcast when I texted Pierre and I said, can't wait to see you in the second intermission. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
So I kind of laid the seed already.
Did you send a selfie is what JR is getting to. Does he actually know what you look
There's
like?
There's only three people
in
the studio.
I know, but
Dean Gord and the guy Pierre doesn't know, which I let him know through text. Yeah. That's me.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he came in, nice, good, firm, really good handshake.
Yeah.
Very good.
Very
handshake.
Strong. Pierre's a very strong action.
And then came in with a nice hug and said, great to finally meet you in person.
Yeah.
It's now, so nice to be in the building.
Did you get the sense he was being truthful now? Now, honestly.
What?
Well, we've all met people, sometimes people of the opposite sex, right? Okay, perhaps earlier in our lives or maybe this weekend where you've been texting back and forth. Now, it's a little different now because you can share through social media pictures and stuff. So it's not like it used to be. When you would meet someone on a so-called blind date or whatever, you'd meet someone and you go, and it didn't quite necessarily live up to expectations, but you couldn't let your face say that. You had to. So did his jaw drop? Did anything? Did it look disappointed?
No,
and how little lower than average height you were? Anything like that?
Pierre and I are right around the same height.
We're
right around. He's a little taller than me, but we're right around there.
I was actually going to ask you, what were your expectations? I saw he was all dressed up. I think he's going to Brian Burke, where he has a shirt and tie on all the time. Did he have the round glasses going?
Yeah, he had the glasses on, everything. Okay. It was awesome.
Was the head completely shaved, or is he still going with a little bit of fluff on the side?
He had the fresh shave going on.
Oh, he did. Good.
I had the fresh shave, and Simmer had the fresh shave going on too.
Nice.
We all had fresh domes.
Okay.
It was good. We were looking sharp. And it was fantastic. And he sat down. It was just like we were on the telephone together.
There you go.
Neither party was disappointed. I'm not going to speak for Pierre, but we chatted for a little bit.
There's no way
that he was disappointed with our conversation.
Will there be a second date?
Yes.
Did you get a rose? Is he
actually? That's the key.
I got a dozen roses
JR, forget about the modern day. Anybody, and I was in that world for 5 years that's dated or been on dating apps, understands that pictures mean nothing, right? And the minute you see the person, you've made a decision as to whether or not that is anything remotely what you saw, right? Like
this is going to continue.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I narrowed it down when I went along. There was the odd time when I first started dating. I'd set up nice dinners, and by the time I finished dinner, I'm like, I'm probably not going to see this person again either because they didn't like me, I didn't like them. Then you just realize, you know what I'm going to do in the future? Here, just gonna meet for a coffee. I don't mind the $2 if that's all it takes.
You can make a quick exit,
small investment,
and that's all you do. But that is kind of the funny thing. So, no, I thought that was a pretty cool moment, though.
Very good.
Very good.
And how was your weekend, JR?
It was fine. Yeah, low key. A couple of golf games. Really didn't get up to too much. Went out for dinner on Saturday night with some friends we hadn't seen in a while. So yeah, it was all good. All good. Yeah, and enjoying the nice weather. And of course, today is a very busy and big day, Election Day. As you heard Chris mention in the update, polls will open at 9:30 this morning. If you are one of the 6 million people who didn't vote in the advance of polls, your opportunity, of course, comes today. A full 12 hours, 9:30 this morning until 9:30 tonight. If you got your voter card, got all your information on there, tells you where to go, etc., etc. If you don't, you can still vote. Go to elections.ca, type in your postal code, gives you all the information right there. So make sure you get out and vote at some point today. All right, 6:19. We will take a break when we come back. We got a ton of stuff to get to. We'll get to Simmer's scouting report from Saturday's prospects game with an eye toward who caught his eye among the Sens prospects in their 4-3 win over the Habs. Two teams, by the way, will meet again this afternoon in Montreal at 4 o'clock ahead of main camp opening on Wednesday. And, of course, the overarching storyline from that remains one Brady Tkachuk, who remains, as we sit here this morning at 6:19, unsigned. A couple of more restricted free agents did sign their deals on the weekend, so we're whittling down the numbers. I believe it's down to either 8 or 9 now, including Brady Tkachuk. So we'll get you all the latest on all the hockey stuff, including the Big Z back for another season at 44. We'll set up the baseball week ahead. The Blue Jays heading into the second-to-last week of the season with a game-and-a-half lead in the wild card. And, of course, a busy NFL Sunday, including just a terrific game to wrap it up last night between the Ravens and the Chiefs. So we'll get into all of it when we come back. We're glad you're with us here on a Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back. 6:25 here on a Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer still to come. The first of 6 code words you're going to get today in our Red Blacks Jersey Monday contest. We've got your very own or somebody's very own customized Red Blacks jersey to dress it up however you want to give away. We'll do that tomorrow morning. To get in on the grand prize draw, you need to get in at least one of the 6 code words we're going to give you throughout the day today here on TSN 1200. Your first one will come between now and 8 o'clock. When you hear it, you got 10 minutes to text it to us at 12-1200, and that's all you need to do. That puts you into the draw. We draw one name tomorrow morning, and that person wins the prize. We got that. We've got our TSN 1200 $1,000 minute as well, just before 8 o'clock. Maybe today will be the day, although I've been saying that for the past 2-3 weeks. Hasn't really worked, so now I'm not going to emphasize it as much. So we got that as well. Okay, Duke Ellington will join us coming up after 9 o'clock this morning to talk NFL. Interesting day again yesterday. Some upsets, lots of injuries, some questionable officiating, and a terrific Sunday night game to wrap up the Sunday of action as the Ravens came back to beat the Chiefs. We'll talk all about that throughout the morning and with Duke Ellington after 9 and after 8. Paul Lapolis, head coach of the Red Blacks, will join us for his usual Monday visit. We got no game to talk about from last week, but certainly a lot of news made with the signing of the new quarterback, the man they call Duck. So we'll talk about that and how, well, I don't think he's had a chance to look at him at practice, but expectations for when he might play, etc., and some of the other new players brought in. Of course, Red Blacks and Hamilton will play this coming Wednesday. All right, so that's the show ahead. So we'll get to football, we'll get to baseball, we're going to start with hockey. And, Simmer, we'll get into your scouting report maybe next hour a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But maybe give us a couple of names, a couple of guys that caught your eye from Saturday's game versus Montreal.
I think the biggest thing was to see Sogard live and just to see the size, the athleticism. Nothing but impressed with that, JR. To watch JBD and just recognize, again, live, the talent, the feel. Just needs some maturity. Certainly Greg kind of jumped out. And I think also from a Sokolov standpoint, I guess my expectations, it wasn't a downer by necessarily, because certainly you can see some improvement in him and as he rotates his hips and kind of gets in stride. But I guess I just expected a little bit more dominant player in a sense of, hey, he's going to need some more American League time. And I'm sure at some point he'll end up being a player. Pinto was a man amongst boys. And the sleeper pick, or the guy that kind of stood out for me, was actually, is it Reinhardt? Is that how you'd end up saying
Reinhardt,
it?
Reinhardt, yeah.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised on that. That's kind of the fun of going, JR. It's just, hey, you know, for me, it's an open canvas, sitting back and kind of watching and also understanding, hey, people said, what did you think of the Canadians, guys? They couldn't have been more anonymous to me. You're trying to focus so much on identifying find the Sens players that I really didn't even pay attention.
Well, and I was watching the game on the stream, and first of all, it's and listen, this is, you know, these kids have been together for, well, they haven't played together, most of them, or a lot of them ever. They've only been together for a week, so you would expect the hockey to be disjointed and sloppy, and that's exactly what it was. So you're kind of looking at individual skill as opposed to kind of team play, or, you know,
very
we're gonna string
so.
Together eight
yeah.
passes and yeah. this unbelievable play or whatever, so... Yeah, that's I think, always the hard part of judging it. And, again, it's one game. Some of these guys hadn't played a hockey game in 18 months, the few. So you also have to kind of, you know, Be patient, I guess, is the right
word. Well, not only patient, but also how you approach rookie camp at times. I know it sounds funny, but they could have done a heavy lift the day before or could be into a training mode where necessarily, like, they're not queuing up the entire camp that it's for a rookie game. Do you know what I mean? So, hey, everyone reacts a little bit differently. For a lot of guys, more the first-year guys, but you are so overwhelmed by the fitness, JR, that you're struggling, you know? So, yeah, no, it's just an adjustment, as you said, and just fun to be there live and see a little bit and now kind of see how they advance to big camp, how that's handled. I'm assuming from a Sens perspective, this will be kind of fast and furious. I don't think we're going to exactly see two teams and everybody gets a game. It's kind of like, hey, here's the 30 guys. Let's start getting right at it, getting combinations together. I don't think there'll be a lot of fooling around by DJ Smith come camp.
Yeah. Camp begins Wednesday. First exhibition game, believe it or not, is this coming Sunday. It is less than a week away, so they get right into it very quickly. Now, of course, the question is going to be, is Brady Tkachuk going to be there? We are now T-minus 2 days away from the opening of training camp. And as we sit here this morning at 6:29 a.m., Brady Tkachuk is unsigned, although his brother did a very good job of dropping a bomb into the middle of everything on the weekend. Speaking on the 32 Thoughts podcast, and Matthew Tkachuk weighing in on the contract situation with his brother. Before we get to hearing from Matthew, let's hear from Sens VP of Player Development, Pierre McGuire, who guested on our Prospects broadcast on Saturday with his update from the Sens perspective on where the talks are at.
Since I've been here, we've had 5 meetings, either via phone or face-to-face with Newport Sports Management. Not one of them has ended in an acrimonious manner. Not one of them, I can tell you. We're trying to negotiate. We're in a firm position. They're in a firm position. We'll see where it goes. We're going to have another discussion with them before this week starts, this coming week starts, and hopefully we can make some headway. They want to probably make some headway, and we want to make some headway.
All right, so there you go. That stands to kind of, you know, what we all thought in the absence of real information is, you know, both sides have kind of dug in a little bit, and it's going to take one side to kind of open the door, maybe just a little crack to get things going.
Yeah, and hey, what Pierre McGuire is saying right there, first of all, Pierre McGuire is very tight with Newport Sports. Not that that matters, JR, but has good relationship, as does Pierre Dorion. But at the same time, Newport Sports, for the most part, unless it becomes, and I'm thinking back, one of the times it became very contentious was Craig Oster when he had Evander Kane, right? Remember when that happened in Winnipeg, and almost quickly he decided after his clothes got thrown in the shower that he was going to have shoulder surgery? Well, we know how the rest of that story is played out, but generally, hey, they're going to sit there, JR. They're not going to fight with you. These guys are veterans. They're going to F-smile you, and they're going to do it. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but they're master negotiators, and Ottawa's sitting there. So now it's just a question of they're not going to be a big fight. Hey, they've got a stance. What I think is a little bit different from this standpoint is the dynamic of a father, a brother, an uncle, and everybody else said, hey, there are times where you can massage the player and the parents a little bit. I don't know in this case if you can, and that's a big, big part of negotiating at times of going back to the client or the team of some middle ground. If you've got a very stubborn group, which we may have in the Tkachuks, it is, if you're trying to make that up, JR, well, all of a sudden they're just going to sit there and wait until you blink. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to, and I think the news came out, I believe, Friday night. Maybe a lot of people woke up to it Saturday. The comments of brother Matthew Tkachuk, who weighed in on the 32 Thoughts podcast on the status of his brother's contract negotiation, in which, yeah, Matthew certainly got a lot of the hackles, as they say, up amongst Senator fans about that. But as he said, it's not just Brady's negotiation. It's a family negotiation.
My dad and I are definitely involved. Brady needs us to help him out with that stuff. He wasn't as cutthroat as we were during it, but he's starting to become more of a Tkachuk the later this goes. So it's good though. He's a great player, deserves to get everything he should, and you know, he's the most important part of their team, the captain. He loves it there, absolutely loves it there. So I'm hoping it just, you know, gets better soon. But I guess it can only get better from the sounds of it. So we'll see.
All right. Thanks to the 32 Thoughts podcast for the audio on that one. So I'll ask you this, Zimmer. Do you think that Matthew Tkachuk was doing some public negotiating on behalf of his brother and their agent. Like, was that done for a reason?
No, not at all. I don't see that in any estimation, JR. I actually think it's a bad look for Matthew Tkachuk, and I don't think it helps Brady any in a sense of, you know, getting into a term cutthroat like me and my dad were. I appreciate it's business, JR. You don't need to say something like that. Now, to say he loves it, which he does, and I do recognize, and Brady Tkachuk is presented very maturely, and we love him here in Ottawa. They probably look at him as a baby brother. He just turned 22 years old. You need help. But I didn't like his comments whatsoever when you get into the cutthroat part of it. I recognize business is business, but I do think you take yourself to another side. Now, having said that, and people also got into the weekend on social media, and the reason Keith never won a cup is because he always took too much money. Hey, man, do your homework. You know, putting stuff like that is foolish. The one thing I'll say about the Tkachuks, business is business, but the minute they step on the ice, there has not been one of that family that has ever taken a single shift off or cheated a hockey team. It's up to the hockey team to negotiate with the Tkachuks. But when you throw out a term like that and they're trying to teach him how to be a bit cutthroat, I'm not a big fan of it.
All right. Well, if that was meant to kind of spur things on, at least, Pierre McGuire's comments came 12 hours later, and then we are 36 hours from that. It would appear, at least from what we know, that didn't necessarily move the needle. Doesn't mean that, again, as we said, it takes one side to open the door just a crack to get things going.
Yeah, and again, probably one of the reasons, JR, and this is more people tipping me off, one of the reasons a couple of weeks ago I chose to weigh in was quite simply what was being presented, and now here it is 2 weeks later, and I'm not waking up Saturday morning being all excited what Matthew Tkachuk is saying, but is that what I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, that maybe this isn't as rosy, and maybe it's not as easy, and maybe it isn't just all, hey, the conversations with Newport Sports are always great. Hey, man, how are you? Hey, it's great to see you. They don't give a goddamn in a sense of, hey, they're negotiating. And that doesn't mean, hey, they got great relationships with everyone in the NHL, JR. We've seen times where it works out. We've seen times like Pietrangelo where it doesn't work out. Do you know what I mean? Like this idea that it's, oh, we're going to sit down and have these hard negotiations. Just to let people know, a couple of weeks ago, this wasn't moving along normally. And as I said, their little comment that I took there that I've been told many times, yeah, it hasn't gone all that great in a sense. So as to what that means in the matter of, and that is the other part he said, Brady loves it here. Sounds like both sides want 8 years, want a long deal. But as to what the gulf is between the two sides right now, mm-hmm. I would have to assume that it's pretty great, to be quite honest with you. Or one is not for a second going to budge off of it.
Yes, that you're right. It's one of two things. It's either the gap is very wide or that both sides are just dug in at
exactly.
this point.
So, exactly.
And that's the part that we don't know. So yeah. As Matthew mentioned, and as you know, we've detailed and gone into in detail, as this thing has kind of dragged on now through the summer and now into just a couple of days away from training camp, there is a family history of being, we'll say, firm in their negotiations, which has caused both the dad, Keith, and the brother, Matthew, to miss the start of training camps during their playing careers. Neither of them, though, I've already said I'm not going to call it a holdout, but the unsigned nature of them did not drag into the regular season. They both got their contract issues settled by the time that the real game started. So, again, we've all been sort of pointing toward the opening of training camp as being an important date, and I think that it is. But for me, again, the real deadline is the beginning of the regular season, October the 14th for me. I mean, don't get me wrong, you'd love to have them in camp for the entire part of it. Get rid of all the drama that's about it and the other players being asked about it every day that he's not here. I understand that whole part of it. But whenever it is that he's signed, be it today, be it Wednesday, be it sometime during training camp, or if it drags past that, it will be a story for a day or two. And then it goes away.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the extent of it.
And the other part to it, JR, is you just have to make sure, and it's fine that the dad and the brother, and we all look at Brady, and I assume he's ultra confident, but it also has to be that the athlete's comfortable doing it. Like, I get the sense that Matthew Tkachuk, you know what, couldn't care less if I don't sign the day before camp, and I'll slide right in, and I'll play great. Dad was built that way. I assume Brady's built that way, but that's where you have to be a bit careful of missing camp, and then are you able to just slide right in? One thing, though, you think you'll agree with is that
This certainly allows our good friend Logan Brown to slide in the back door, and probably the coaches and general manager have one final speech prepared for what do they expect from Logan Brown in training camp, and then they may never have to say it again in their life. But, like you said, it's just, you know, where it's at. Now, the part to it, and it's by no design and no plan, I still think at the end of the day that they'll have to be a little more give on the Sens side. I think at some point they get him signed, JR, and to me, I kind of look at the glass half full. The excitement of him arriving into camp, and if it is on a long-term deal, will, you know, I'm not going to say a shot in the arm, but it'll certainly feel good for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you brought up the name Logan Brown, and that was one of the two other stories from the Sens over the weekend. And Logan Brown did, in fact, you got the scoop on this on Saturday. Logan Brown signed his 1 year. He was another far lower profile, restricted, unsigned, restricted free agent of the Sens. He did sign a 1 year deal. It's a two-way contract. So would enable Ottawa, should he not make the team. And now he has to go through waivers this year for the first time. They would be able to send him down to Belleville, but he signed a two-way deal with the Sens, so he'll be in camp. I know you had put forward the idea that maybe he was poking around the idea of going to Europe to play for a year. Why do you think ultimately he decided to remain in the Sens organization?
Well, I don't think there was a trade market, but at that time, JR, I was told, hey, he is not going to come to camp, and I thought that was the end. So this was also kind of updating. Also, the decision on Europe, just from what I understood, it was really driven by the player in a sense of just not interested in doing that at this age. There was a pretty good spot for him, pretty good opportunity, but still very much wants to play in the National Hockey League. At the end of the day, I just don't think there's any trade market. And as to what that means or even what the Sens were asking, I have no idea. But I think he just realized as a player, hey, listen, I've been training all summer. He had a little bit of a back situation, or not a little bit, a back situation that has been resolved. Spent the summer in Arizona training with Keller and Chychrun and Austin Matthews. So, hey, the guy appears to be in a real good spot here. As we all know, the Ottawa center ice is still wide open. Mm. So I think he still just looks at it as an opportunity. And then the other part for a player, you have a bit of that moment where it's like, okay, there's not a lot of interest. I'm going to come to camp. And then you go to the old waiver wire for the first time. And that can be a very humbling thing for a player, recognition that there is not one of the 32 teams in the National Hockey League, 31 outside of Ottawa, that is interested in you. And for a lot of players, that's when you kind of look around and realize, okay, now I've got to do the Nick Paul and stop feeling sorry for myself and start working myself back to the National Hockey League and stop thinking or pretending that there's a bunch of people out there that want me. And I'm assuming the summer might approve that as well.
Here's the thing that Logan Brown is going to get for the first time. He's going to get the, not that he hasn't had the opportunity, but if he puts a good performance onto the ice during the exhibition season, it's either going to be good enough to make the Ottawa Senators, or if it's not good enough to make the Ottawa Senators, he's going to have to go through waivers. And, you know, if his desire is to move on from the organization because he feels he's an NHL player, then if he puts on a good enough performance in the exhibition season, somebody's going to pluck him off of waivers if the Sens can't trade him. Really, for the first time, it really is in his hands now.
Very much so.
He controls everything now by his play during this exhibition season.
Yeah, and the other part,
in terms
too,
of an NHL future.
Very much. And as you said, first of all, there's a lot of scouts. Now, this is a little different, although funny, I saw my buddy Garth Joy, longtime scout for Colorado, was actually at the rookie game on Saturday. And at first he had his mask up, and I thought it was Jimmy Clark who works for the Sens. But anyways, lots of scouts, lots of watching. Here's a thought, JR. First of all, with a two-way contract, there's no risk for a team taking them on waivers, right? It's not even 700 grand. It's 700 over 100. I would look at a team like Arizona, where he's been skating the whole summer. I don't know the dynamic between Andre Tourney and Jeff Brown. I know Bill Armstrong well enough, and John Ferguson Jr. going there. He is best buds with Chychrun and Keller. He's been training there all summer. If the Arizona, Coyotes, if they won't take a flyer at this point, then hey, do you know what I mean? But I would look at a situation like that, hey, there would be a prime team. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, why wouldn't you just give up a draft pick when you have 10,000 of them? Well, they'll just see how this plays out. But it is the best opportunity, and I think for everybody here, just recognized in Ottawa will give him a chance. I don't think they have to force anything, but like I say, it's still wide open in regards to the center ice as well.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I mean, the owner said way back in the spring, you know, we want to add a number one or a number two center, and we want to add a veteran defenseman, a defensive defenseman. They added Delzato. Don't know necessarily that that's quite what people thought of and maybe what he was hinting at. And then they haven't added a center.
Yeah, they added Holden as well.
Right, they traded Dadonov, which created another hole in right wing, which they potentially have now at least, through training camp, have added a body to. Last night they signed Tyler Ennis to a PTO, a professional tryout, so he'll be at camp. Tyler Ennis was here a couple of years ago and actually performed reasonably well in Ottawa. Had 14 goals and 33 points in 61 games 2 years ago. He would look at this as, first of all, familiarity with the coaching staff. They would be familiar with him as well. He had some decent success here. And they would look at that as, well, worst case scenario, he comes here. He isn't ready any longer. We just let him go at the end of it. And if he is, you probably sign him to a minimum salary contract, and you've got a veteran NHLer to play into the lineup.
Yeah, and you've also, JR, over the last year with Balcers to Abramov to Schlappick, there's a bit of a layer also missing in the sense of if you take Brady Tkachuk out of the mix, make a decision that Pinto's not ready, Dadonov is gone, boy, oh boy, you start to thin out in a hurry, right? I watched Sokolov, and just, again, rookie game. We'll see in camp. But to me, he looks like a guy that clearly needs more time in the American Hockey League. You don't have a ton of necessarily transitional players. So a Tyler Ennis, even thrown on a wing on the third line, fills a spot for now. If Brady Tkachuk comes in, you're fine. But the swing of not having all that in training camp, all of a sudden, you start to look at it fairly thinny. And not a panic move, but I thought Ennis actually was, performed terrifically when he came to Ottawa.
Yeah, it seemed like. And then he went out to Edmonton, and for whatever reason, even though, you're thinking about, all the places to go to where you think you're just going to be able to maybe even expand on what you're doing in Ottawa, and it just never worked out for him there. So to wrap up our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question, which ran through the weekend, we launched this Friday. Will Brady Tkachuk be signed by the beginning of camp on Wednesday? And when it was all said and done, 56% of you still felt optimistic throughout the weekend. Now, if we did it again today, I don't know. Maybe it's the same. Maybe it's changed a little bit. 56% yes, 44% no. We are 2 days away. Brady Tkachuk, as of today, remains unsigned. We'll see what transpires in the next 2 days. Sens set to open main camp coming up on Wednesday. First exhibition game in Winnipeg, Sunday night. That's right. We'll have a regular Sens game for you coming up this Sunday here on TSN 1200. Looking forward to it. We'll take a break. 6:45 when we come back. The Jays weekend and the week ahead and a terrific slate of NFL games, including a terrific Sunday nighter. We'll get into all of it when we come back on TSN 1200. Toronto Blue Jays will enter the final 2 weeks of the regular season a game and a half up on the New York Yankees for one of the two wild card spots. Jays beat Minnesota yesterday 5-3. Yankees got thumped. Garrett Cole got booed off the field. So the Jays will be in Tampa for a series that starts tonight. Then they're in Minnesota again next weekend. They got the Yankees for three next week at home, which may, if it gets to that point, tell the tale of the tape as far as making the postseason. But the Jays put themselves in a good position. Boston, by the way, suddenly gotten hot again. So they're a game ahead of Toronto, which is a game and a half ahead of New York. So it's a three-team race for two spots. All kicks off again the last 2 weeks starting tonight. All right, let's get to the NFL Sunday night game because it capped an interesting day yesterday. We're already down to, believe it or not, to 2 weeks into the season. We've got two 0-1 teams playing tonight. There's only 32 teams in the league. There's only seven that are unbeaten. Only seven teams are off to 2-0 starts out of 32. And you would have thought you would have been adding an eighth to the list last night because Kansas City got out to they got a pick six in the first minute of the game off of Lamar Jackson, and they were up 14-3 and kind of controlling the game. But full credit to the Ravens for staying at it and not abandoning the run game. Let's take you to late in the fourth quarter. Kansas City up 36-35. Ravens knocking at the door.
Tyson Williams in the backfield with Pat Ricard. Give his to Lamar Jackson. He'll keep it on the read option, and he flips in for the go-ahead touchdown.
There you go, Lamar Jackson, the second of two TD runs in the second half for him. Now, there were still 2 minutes left on the clock. Kansas City was only down by one in two plays. They got down to the Baltimore, I think it was around the 40, 35, somewhere in there. They've got there's a minute 20 on the clock. They got all their timeouts. They got it, right? It's Kansas City, man. They're just Patrick Mahomes. He can pass a couple of times, maybe run it, whatever. They'll bleed the clock out. They'll kick the field goal. They'll win the game. Instead, Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbles, and Baltimore recovers. But then Kansas City stops them three times in a row, so it's now fourth and one at about midfield. So John Harbaugh's got a decision to make. We can punt it away, as traditionally you do, right? You punt it away, you hope your defense can somehow hold the Chiefs, they won't have any timeouts at that point, or you roll the dice, try for the first down, and then run out the clock, and you've won the game. Here's Lamar Jackson on his conversation with John Harbaugh on making that tough fourth and one call.
Oh, you want to go for it?
I'm like, hell yeah. Again, I said it again. Like Seattle 2 years ago. And he told me to play. I'm like, oh, we should spread him out. And Coach James Urban, my QB coach, he like, you got to go. I'm like, man, I got to get this first down no matter what. I got to jump, dive through a defender. O-line did a great job pushing those guys back. Got the first down for the victory.
I like that. I like that sort of got a little Harbaugh on there. Got a little quarterback coach. Anyway, regardless, Jackson does convert the fourth and one on a run himself. Baltimore runs out the clock and wins the game, 36-35.
Yeah, and all these baby steps, JR, had not beat Mahomes. I think we feel like, especially after the MVP season and collapsing the playoffs, has been a bit of a struggle. It's been some questions on the throwing arm, and there's a great clip going around social media. Harbaugh's yelling to him, hey, should we go for it? Do you want to go for it? And that's putting kind of, hey, let the onus and let him be successful. And so I think if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan with lots of injuries and just kind of lots of things that happened last night, including allowing Lamar to make the decision at a key part of the football game, end up being just a great victory for Baltimore.
It takes a lot of stones, man. I was thinking about it as I was in the shower this morning, to put yourself in John Harbaugh's shoes at that point. Because it really is, it's the ultimate. If it was not the Kansas City Chiefs that were the other team, you probably are going to punt the ball, right? You're going to punt it. You're hopefully going to pin them down inside their 20, maybe even inside the 10. They're going to have no timeouts. There's going to be about a minute left on the clock. You've got, you know, traditionally, Baltimore's had a good defense. They've got tons of injuries, but you would think you'd be able to, you'd feel good about your chances. But with Kansas City, you just don't. And so, man, I really admire that. I don't know if I would have had the stones to do make the decision. Yeah. Because you know, if Baltimore got stopped on that fourth and one, he would have absolutely been skewered for making that call.
No, and for sure, and there's no way he buries his quarterback, but I thought this was just a bit of that building of confidence where, hey, let's go. Hey, do you want to go for it? And he says, yeah, let's go for it. Then let him go for it, and he ends up getting it. And like you said, it takes a lot of confidence, and that's one of the beautiful things about Harbaugh. Has had a long tenure in Baltimore and doesn't really get caught up in the highs and lows, right? I mean, he seems to be very consistent in the way he approaches and at the same time, very confident.
Meanwhile, your favorite quarterback, Tom Brady, had himself a day as the Buccaneers were taking on the Falcons.
Second down and five, about five and a half. Mark to make is the 7-yard line. Here's the snap out of the gun. Brady looking, going toward the end zone. And Godwin makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Fire the cannons. Five touchdown passes, Tom Brady today.
I mean, it's just the guy's freaking 44 years old. He had five touchdown passes. Gronk caught a couple of them. Mike Evans had two, that one to Chris Godwin. The Buccaneers remain unbeaten at 2-0. They beat the Falcons. Tom Brady, just amazing.
Well, not only that, Jared, but so much better than a year ago in a sense of you wondered 2 years ago with the Patriots, is it him, is it the personnel? Then last year, you got a whole new system, and it was really halfway through the season that they hit stride and won a Super Bowl. Now you roll back, and more importantly, the year off, whatever you want to call it, for Gronk to get healthy, pretty much back into form that he was. It was very successful probably 5 or 6 years ago. So now mixing the comfort of that, they've got a better running game with Fournette. They've got other options. And as you said, for Tom Brady, I guess at this point, Jair, whatever you line up and show him defensively, does it really matter, right? He's got the weapons around him. He's got the protection. Like, what are you going to present that is really going to ever cause him a problem? I guess unless there's an incredible pass rush, you know what? He's going to light you up almost every time.
Did you watch any of the Cowboy-Charger game?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The officiating in that game. No, it wasn't one-sided one way or the other. I got no dog in the fight, although, admittedly, I don't really like Dallas. But but the amount of, I got to look it up, how many penalties there ended up being. Some of them were declined. There was a point where it seemed like there was a flag either every play or every second play, to the point of just being ridiculous. Like, it's, I understand the NFL is trying to crack down on certain things and they're trying to get rid of taunting and that sort of thing, but Boy, oh boy, did that just kill the momentum of that game yesterday.
Yeah, was there a sequence where they had three calls on one play and they were trying to decide where to mark the
yeah,
ball?
Exactly.
And I had no idea what was going on. The part, my takeaway from it was, I'm assuming that Ezekiel Elliott is kind of their second best running back right now, but also just so impressed, JR, in watching Dak Prescott play, you know, for understanding it. Not that they rolled up a ton of points yesterday, but I agree with you, the officiating, the feel around it, and a lot of people feel like Jerry Jones, he's the one that has a hold of the league. I don't understand the inconsistency to it, as you said. I just say Ty should just go to no flag at all. It really does, and we've seen that, unfortunately, in the CFL a lot, where it just absolutely ruins the game as a fan.
You got the number of calls, Hammer?
8 penalties for the Cowboys for 76 yards. Mm. The Chargers, 12 for 99 yards.
And when you told me the total is 20, I'm actually surprised it's that low.
What's a normal game, JR? Like any, like is well, 5-5 kind of?
I think it's more than that. But you know, like I can only go by Philly in week one. They had 14, and Atlanta had 11.
Oh wow!
There were 25 penalties. So for you to tell me right now there were 20, there must have been a lot
that were
declined. Because it felt like there was just a flag every other play.
Does an offsetting penalty count, or does it just is it a wash?
I don't believe so.
So offsetting and declined, right?
Yeah, exactly. So as I said, there were probably more flags, and there ended up being technically the amount of penalties that show up on the score sheet, but just kind of ruined the whole flow of the game for both teams. You know, again, I'm not suggesting it was one way or the other. And listen, there are a lot of Dallas fans that feel like they get the short end of the stick on officiating sometimes. Anyway, the Cowboys won the game. Big win. Greg Zuerlein, 56-yard field goal at the gun. And the Cowboys got a big win on the road in L.A., although it kind of had the feel of a Cowboys home game. Seemed like three-quarters of the stadium was cheering for the Cowboys in L.A. All right, we'll talk more NFL with Duke Ellington. Your thoughts on the weekend and the games of yesterday, always welcome at 12-1200. Don't forget, Paul Lapolis, head coach of the Red Blacks, will join us coming up just after 8 o'clock as they get set for a rare midweek home game. Hamilton's in town for a game coming up on Wednesday night. So we'll get to Paul Lapolis after 8. Still to come, your first code word of the day in our Red Blacks Jersey Monday contest, and more on the Brady Tkachuk situation after our top of the hour update. That's coming up next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.